Good afternoon. My name is Stephanie, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the Employment Network Partnership to Increase Employment Outcomes and Self-Sufficiency conference call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you. Bob Williams, you may begin your conference.
Good afternoon and welcome to today's webinar on how ER agencies, workforce systems, and employment networks can and are, in fact, working effectively, working together, and most importantly, with beneficiaries to improve and sustain their long-term education, employment, and economic prospects. What makes the employment support programs we run unique and powerful is we are able to provide individuals the support they need to prepare for, obtain, maintain, and advance in good jobs and careers that can lead to better self-supporting futures. This requires a great deal of ingenuity, practical collaboration, and commitment on everyone's part. Today, we are fortunate to have three practitioners who are stretching the art of the possible by translating these principles into practice. It gives me great pleasure to introduce to you Kevin Nickerson of the New York State Department of Labor, Tammy Libby Coates of Employment Resources, Inc., and Employment Network in Wisconsin, and James Ferrandolello of the Massachusetts Rehabilitation Commission. We are in for a treat. Each will highlight partnership efforts in their areas and then take questions. So, take it away.
Hi, this is Tammy Linick. Thank you very much, Bob, for that introduction. Next slide, please. I really enjoy talking about partnerships and collaborations because I really believe it is the key to finding more effective ways to serve and support people with disabilities to be successful and create efficiencies in government systems. It's really important, and I think we're finding ways to do that within the ticket program. Whenever I think about collaboration or partnership, I always remind myself that the not only for what is in it for my organizational mission, customers, or staff, but what is in it for my potential partner. We have to have mutual goals. We must have common customers, and the goal has to be the same and agreed upon. Next slide, please. My part of the presentation is going to focus on Work Incentive Benefits Counseling Services as a partner within ENs and the role these services can play in developing very productive partnerships with Social Security and state VR agencies. Next slide, please. But first I want to let you know, I'm not an agency director. I'm not a Work Incentive Benefits Specialist. And so I do have with me my sidekick, who is the manager of our Ticket to Work program. Kate Kingry is here in case we get some technical questions, and she is the brains and project detail person behind our employment network. So thank you, Kate, for joining me. Next slide. Stay here. I just wanted to talk a little bit about employment resources and our EN. We are a small nonprofit. We're based in Madison, Wisconsin. We've been in the Work Incentives Benefits Planning and Assistance business for about 20 years. We have 18 staff. And currently we employ 9 Work Incentive Benefit Specialists across varying programs. And those programs involve, we started a new service of benefits counseling back in the 90s to provide benefits planning for people with physical disabilities so they could understand how working would impact their benefits. This later evolved into a partnership with our state VR agency to provide fee-for-service arrangement. Then along came Social Security's Benefits Planning and Outreach, Benefits Planning Assistance and Outreach Program, which evolved into the more recent WIPA program, which has come and gone, but is back, coming back again, which we're really excited about. In addition, for 10 years, we've had a grant from our State Department of Health Service to provide statewide training and technical assistance around benefits issues and work incentives. And we also manage enhanced work incentives counseling services under the Social Security Bond Demonstration Project for Wisconsin. So our expertise is really in understanding the complicated overlapping benefit systems that ticket holders operate under or must operate under when they work. So when we considered Ticket to Work in 2008, we considered how could we make this program fit our organization and how can we create solutions for our customers, Social Security, and also for our state VR agency. So our EM model was created around the idea of partnership to provide employment retention services and providing what we do best, which is work incentives counseling services. Next slide, please. So back to the mutual goals. If you are an EN, you already know that the ultimate goal, there's a lot of in-betweens, but the ultimate goal of the Ticket to Work program is to increase self-sufficiency for SSI and SSDI beneficiaries. And the biggest win for SSA is to see a beneficiary leave those disability cash benefits forever and ever. For VR agencies, in working toward this goal of self-sufficiency, one measure that they have is how many Social Security beneficiaries reach 9 months of substantial gainful activity wages. And when this occurs, that VR agency is able to be reimbursed by Social Security for all costs associated with serving that individual. It's a big accomplishment, but in no way does it guarantee that a beneficiary is going to continue to work at a substantial level over the long term after they have been closed by that VR agency. And for ENs, ENs are paid and measured by Social Security according to the long-term employment outcomes of a ticket holder. The biggest win for an EN is to have that ticket holder get a job they love, earn substantial wages, and keep on working through the life of their ticket. So we all have, and logic really points to everyone working together. Next slide, please. So one of the big obstacles that has to be overcome is that the ticket holder's goal is many times based on their level of fear or comfort with employment. And national research is consistently showing that Social Security disability beneficiaries hesitate to participate in employment efforts out of fear that paid employment is going to cost that loss of critical cash benefits and health insurance. And that health care is probably one of the primary fears and barriers. And even when we had a great economy back in the 90s, even when jobs were falling from the sky, people were afraid to work. And lots of questions about what would happen to their benefits if they work, if there's a person with significant physical disability or health issue, why would I jeopardize my health care coverage? What if I fail? What if I get sick? What if I can't get back on benefits if I need to? And so a lot of people do decide to play it safe. Next slide, please. So in looking at some of the mutual goals, how are we doing? And, here are some stats in general. This information came from the Virginia Commonwealth University and is used in the initial training for the Work Incentives Planning and Assistance Program and training of their the CWIC. So I thought this was probably good data. Of SSI and SSDI beneficiaries, 40% indicate a desire to work, 7% are working at a given time, and 0.2% actually leave the disability rolls. Not 2%, but 0.2%. So those ultimate goals of Social Security, VR, and ENs are being realized but it's in a pretty small way. And hoping with collaboration that we can one person at a time build those statistics. So barriers, next slide, please. Again, looking at fears of beneficiaries, just imagine the puzzle created when you think about the layers of government, public benefit systems, and entitlements that people with disabilities get involved in, all with differing eligibility criteria, various rules for assets and earnings levels, and systems overlapping, and difficulty coordinating those systems. Friends and family and most human services professionals are not confident speaking about the complexities of working and benefits, and that's very understandable. So the automatic answer for people is really play it safe. These are myths. You need all your benefits. Don't hurt too much, or you're going to lose them forever, and it'll be really hard to get back on. So in thinking about work incentives benefit specialists as a partner, these are a group of people who really enjoy and excel at figuring this stuff out. This service got its start in the early 90s as employment services professionals tried to help individuals unravel these benefits issues when they were thinking about working. And it's since evolved and provides probably the most effective method for communicating correct information to help beneficiaries understand their individual benefit situation and overcome fears. Evidence is mounting that is supporting Work Incentives Benefits Counseling as a service that can increase earnings and support long-term employment for Social Security beneficiaries. There's lots of research out there and studies that have been done. So if it is a goal of SSA, VR agencies, and EANs to reduce dependency on the Social Security benefits, they really are starting to place importance on understanding and partnering with Work Incentives Benefit Specialists along the continuum of employment, of the employment process. And not just as at a point in time in service, not just when a person considers working, not just when they have a job offer, but a very important time is when they are earning substantially and using the work incentives and are in the arena of benefits transitions. So next slide, please. And I think we're on the next slide, too. One more. So I was just going to talk really briefly about qualities of Work Incentives Benefit Specialists and how would you find a benefit specialist to hire or partner with. And right now there really are no standardized qualifications for Work Incentives Benefit Specialists, but there are a lot of things you can evaluate to determine skills and experience. For instance, how did the person get trained? There are a variety of training programs out there, and I'm just going to touch on those that are the probably the most well-known and that I am most familiar with. And through Virginia Commonwealth University, they provide the training for the WIPA program. They offer 1 week intensive face-to-face training followed by intensive testing and field assignments to become a Certified Work Incentives Coordinator, or a CWIC. And nationally out there, there's a bunch of them out there. 350 people have been trained and certified as a community partner or a CWIC, and they work in various settings. This doesn't count all of the WIPA programs that are going to be starting up again, 100 programs across the country. And I'm not sure how many people that represents. Also, Cornell University offers 8 weeks of online webinars followed by a test with file reviews and continuing education requirements to become a benefits and work incentives practitioner. And currently there are about 100 practitioners fully certified through Cornell, with 250 with provisional certification or in the training process. So right there's a bunch of folks out there that are doing this kind of work in various settings. And beyond the initial training on federal topics, the benefits specialist really needs to know about state-specific benefits, Medicaid, housing, food, energy assistance. SSI supplements and Medicaid buy-in programs for workers with disabilities are very different in different states. It's also important that benefit specialists participate in technical assistance or have peer support. It's difficult for them to increase their skills without others to evaluate their work, discuss cases with, and ask questions and compare notes. Another important ingredient is the experience level of a person. They may have been trained and certified, but they may go back to an agency where they wear many hats. How many actual cases have they worked with? How much time of their day is spent on benefits work? Take a lot of experience to learn the job and work with people effectively. So another issue is an experienced benefits specialist will likely have established relationships with Social Security offices and can speak the language of Social Security. They understand the environment that people are working under when they're Social Security beneficiaries. I'm just going to move on to the next slide, please. I want to talk beyond that, I really want to talk about EN success and how it really is based on the earnings and benefit status of ticket holders. And a benefit specialist can help in a few ways. Not only can they help to ease the fears and guide beneficiaries, but the benefits fields are also going to help an EN in getting appropriately evaluated by SSA and getting paid. If a person is successful to the point where they are no longer eligible to receive their SSA cash benefit, and an EN is able to collect outcome payments for serving that individual, the higher the percentage of outcome payments, suggests that that EIN is effective in assisting people to move off of benefits and also keeping people working for the long term. And as a key measure of EIN effectiveness, SSA looks very closely at the percentage of outcome payments that the EIN is collecting compared to milestone payments. One of the things that is an issue in a RUB is that the ticket holder will not be placed in an outcome status until benefits payments are stopped. And sometimes it can take Social Security months to catch up and eventually stop that benefits check. So outcome payments do become delayed, and the EIN does not get paid in a timely manner, or may be wondering why they're not getting payments. And under these circumstances, the benefit specialists can really speak the language and troubleshoot that with the Social Security and Maximus and correct benefit status of a ticket holder and assist the individual to avoid an overpayment and assist that EIN to get paid. So I wanted to make that point. Next slide, please. So I wanted to talk a little bit then about the role of Social Security field offices and their role in the life of the ticket holder. They are responsible for maintaining correct and timely data on Social Security beneficiaries. This means wage information is up to date in the Social Security database. This means work incentives are implemented correctly. This means benefits are started and stopped at the right time and beneficiary overpayments are avoided. We know staff members in SSA field offices are shrinking, disability roles are growing, they are overburdened. We hear it all the time from different ENs. And Social Security employment records, it's difficult to have them updated in real time. And most people who work substantially, regardless of their reporting efforts, will continue to get paid for a time after the cash benefits should have stopped. And this is becoming a real hardship on SSA staff who become stretched very thin. Especially when they have to piece together a work history, wages, and try to fit in the pieces to the puzzle together for people who are working. So Social Security beneficiary overpayments resulting from employment and resulting scary letters received from SSA can be key reasons why beneficiaries get disillusioned and give up on working. And how can we help? Well, next slide, please. Knowing a benefit specialist can partner with Social Security to assist those ticket holders. And they can do that by knowing in advance when benefits should stop and attempting to avoid an SSA overpayment for the individual. Communicating that a work review will need to be initiated, being proactive in connecting the Social Security and contacting the Social Security office about it, and being helpful as opposed to being adversarial. For instance, having all the needed information in a package to present to that Social Security office really helps, and being able to talk Social Security language to get that ticket holder served. Next slide, please. So now I'm going to switch gears and talk about partnering with state vocational rehabilitation agencies from the EIN perspective. Jim is going to talk next about really talk in detail about this, but I just wanted to give you a perspective from our Partnership Plus perspective. VR agencies really are responsible. Their role is in helping the individual with a disability to prepare, pursue, and attain employment. VR was never set up to provide long-term employment retention services. Ideally, a VR customer will enter services, receive services that will assist them through the process to achieve the job they desire. And that VR customer will be successfully closed and never have to use VR services again. But that's not always the case for many Social Security beneficiaries. They work, they stop working for any number of reasons. It can be health, it can be, you know, overpayments, it could be anything. And sometimes they go back to VR. Sometimes they do it again and again and again. And VR agencies are really seeing Partnership Plus as one possible answer in assisting with what we sometimes refer to as the VR or the VR revolving door. And Jim is going to talk a lot about the recidivism of VR consumers and the role that an EIN can play in helping VR consumers in employment retention. Next slide, please. So in partnering with state VR agencies, I just want to, you know, talk about our partnership a little bit. And it was really Partnership Plus was the foundation for our business plan when we became an EN in 2008. And, you know, in looking at partnerships, what was in it for VR? Well, essentially our EN would be on deck after VR closure to continue to serve ticket holders for the long term. Our service would be work incentives planning and assistance at a time when people are in the thick of dealing with benefits issues and using work incentives. While they may be doing great in their job after their VR closure, they may lack the confidence and expertise to navigate the complex work incentives and government systems, such as Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, on and on and on. And our mantra, what we like to say is, let us focus on your benefits while you focus on working. And with continued support, we hope that person may be more likely to work long-term and less likely to return back to the VR system. And with the help of REN, we can help a person to attain 9 months of substantial earnings. We can track this progress for the VR agency, and the VR agency might possibly recover more cost reimbursement. And the person keeps on working successfully. And for example, in our organization, for the past couple of years in serving approximately 25 post-VR customers in Wisconsin, 75% of them have attained 9 months of SGA earnings and in turn generated cost reimbursement for VR. So we're real happy about that. And so what's in it for us? Well, after VR closure, while phase one milestone payments are no longer available, there is still approximately $15,000 left of cash value to a person's ticket if they continue to work through the life of the program. And we're pretty excited to say we now have about 8 people who we expect to use up their entire ticket and become what we're going to guess call ticket to work graduates in the next several months. We're pretty excited about that. And again, the benefit for the consumer, well, that ticket holder receives seamless, ongoing services, and they keep on working, we hope. Next slide, please. So there are a lot of other important connections and considerations when you think about partnering. Many people with health and disability issues do not go off and stay off of cash benefits. It may be an on-again, off-again situation. Many individuals with severe physical disabilities or mental illness contend with episodic needs when it comes to their health and their ability to work. They're motivated to work, they can earn at high levels for long periods of time, but suddenly need to access benefits because of occurring health issues. When they recover, they likely go to work. So understanding the Medicare and Medicaid eligibility and related health care options in your state is really important, and having those connections with the right people. Accessibility issues is another thing. A lot of people we are working with encounter situations involving disability disclosure, needs for accommodations, and they seek advice from us. And so we do have an affiliation with our Great Lakes ADA Center, which is one of the 10 regional ADA centers across the country. They are an excellent resource. They always answer their 800 number to problem solve. Another issue, poverty. It really is a reality for most of the people we are serving, and most beneficiaries have few, if any, assets. In many cases, have huge debt associated with medical bills, student loans, auto expenses, on and on and on. And climbing out of debt is a real disadvantage for someone who needs clothes for work, reliable transportation, or even a place to live. So financial assistance or referral to resources that can help at a critical time can make a big difference between job success and failure. We're just starting to make the connections to financial literacy resources and asset development strategies for our ticket holders, and it's an area we are going to be concentrating more on in the coming year. And Kevin is going to be talking about some really cool stuff that's going on with his EN and workforce system around asset development and financial literacy. So in summary, I would just like to share that we're 5 years into our EN project, and our vision of the project is really becoming reality. We have a high degree of collaboration not only with our VR agency but with our local Social Security offices, and we are having success in ticket holders staying on the job for the long term. So hopefully this has been helpful information. I appreciate you listening to me, and I am now going to pass the baton to Jim Fessalillo.
Very good. Thank you, Tammy. First, I would like to thank Commissioner Williams, Michael, and all your staff for putting this together. This is really great. As was said, I'm with the Massachusetts Rehabilitation Commission, and I oversee a small department of about 23 individuals. In addition to this Partnership Plus initiative that we call Partnership Plus Advantage, we also have a WIPA program, and we're very pleased that that's coming back to us. We did have the resources to continue in the absence of funding. And the other thing that we do at our department is we oversee the Supported Employment Initiative, exclusively serving individuals who need supported employment, and we have access to state dollars. So this was a nice, for the ongoing support, so this was a nice fit. It really fit into our department well, trying to develop this Partnership Plus initiative. Next slide, please. Next slide. It's a partnership, and when we developed this program, we wanted to take a look at the what were the factors, the issues, the concerns, and the boundaries that each partner brings to the table. In other words, what might be the obstacles or the deal breakers in trying to put this thing together? Each member of this partnership has mandates, procedures, strengths, limitations, issues, and priorities that we all needed to keep in mind in order to implement this program. Our attempt was and is to understand these concerns and to put together a program by looking at it from each member's perspective. Next slide, please. And the next word we're looking at is a plus. We wanted to create a mutual program for our consumers, for the agency, for the ENs and Social Security that would benefit all. Each member brings something to the table that we cannot achieve alone. We virtually all have the same goal, but the challenge really was to recognize our individual strengths and resources that would benefit each other. And by recognizing each partner's ability to contribute to their part, to the success of this program, we felt it would create a much more fluid, cost-effective, and efficient approach to better achieve all of our goals. Next slide, please. You know, traditionally, our Partnership Plus program was, and in some cases still is, when an individual is being closed out of Oak Rehab, we let them know of the ENs in the state. We may or may not facilitate that connection, and we close the individual out. We wanted to do a lot more. As with any agency, we run into people that like that slogan, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Well, I have a real problem with that. You know, back in the day, we had a 13-inch black and white TV that wasn't broke. But the 52-inch plasma that I have now is a lot better. So we wanted to create an alternative, not to necessarily do away with tradition, but to at least explore and test our options. Next slide, please. And we call this Partnership Plus, this new initiative, Advantage. We're not trying to create a whole new program. We're just looking at making an existing program more advantageous to all. Next slide, please. Program goals. The first step is really to understand what all of our goals are. What is the mission of each person involved in this? In developing this, from the vocational rehab background I have, is you generally take a look at where you are now. And where do you want to go, and establish those goals and understand what needs to be done in order to achieve those goals. certainly the goals are to enhance the service to our consumers. If we're not doing that, we're really not accomplishing much. Tammy talked about the recidivism in voc rehab. We wanted to reduce that. At one time, our recidivism was quite high, something like 29%. And in all cases, that's not necessarily bad. It's probably not even the right word, recidivism. But it is bad if it's because individuals are being placed and don't have that little extra support to maintain employment. Leverage funding. Funding is tight for everybody, and I don't see it actually getting any better. We truly wanted to promote utilization of the ticket to work. We wanted to increase our EN within Massachusetts. We don't have a lot of ENs in Massachusetts. What's in it for us? Well, besides our mission and caring about our consumers, if consumers who have a ticket or on SSIDI are placed and maintain employment at whatever level, at SGA levels, it would increase our cost reimbursement. And the other thing is we wanted to strengthen our relationship between the agency and the ENs, which in Massachusetts, the majority of them are our community rehab providers. Next slide, please. To enhance services, in addition to the supports, we recognize that there's individuals who need more comprehensive services than what the Partnership Plus can bring. As I said, one of our charges here at the Department of Statewide Employment Services within voc rehab is overseeing supported employment. And with the referrals we received for the Partnership Plus, when it was time for them to leave us and to be connected to an EN, their challenges were such that they needed much more comprehensive services than an EN would be able to provide. Their earning levels would be way below any threshold amount. They truly were supported employment consumers. Rather than them losing their employment, we were able to turn them over to our supported employment program where they are receiving the proper ongoing supports. Next slide. Again, reduction in recidivism. You know, recidivism, there's a lot of reasons for it. Sometimes it's just a moment in the first place. The assessment wasn't correct. The position wasn't correct. The person wants to move on, and a whole bunch of other reasons that Tammy has said. But there's also the reason that they're not receiving the proper supports. Early data is showing that the individuals involved in this program are much more likely to maintain employment. Next slide. In leveraging funding, we need to look at all of our resources, both for the services that we can provide within our agency, but also what are the other resources outside of voc rehab that we could leverage their resources to help our mutual consumers to achieve success. So by leveraging our funding, we're not only helping us, we're also helping the community rehab providers, the ENs, in order to be more cost-effective and to serve consumers. Next slide. And again, what one of our goals was to promote EN partnerships, to promote ENs. We do not have a lot of them, and the system is evolving. The ticket to work regs and the ability to get reimbursement, they're always improving, but there's still a need to encourage providers to become ENs. Next slide, please. Obviously, the more individuals who have tickets who are in use at VR that are successfully employed and remain employed will increase our cost reimbursement. In addition, a lower recidivism rate allows for more, or at least newer, individuals to receive services. Next slide, please. We want to strengthen our relationships. It isn't always a them and us attitude or a feeling. Sometimes it does go that way. But there needs to be, in any collaboration, a trust, you know, a common belief in the value of the success of achievable outcomes, as well as the assurances that the partnership is mutually beneficial to all. This program does reinforce those goals. It does establish trust, and we've demonstrated that it's a mutually beneficial for all of us to work together to secure and provide a more effective, efficient program to help our consumers gain independence and self-sufficiency. Next slide, please. We had a make it fit. I don't know about your agency, but I know about mine, and that is that we have mandates. We have existing service delivery systems. We have federal, state regulations, collective bargaining agreements, policies, procedures, resources, staffing, time, money. They all have a significant factor on trying to put something together. So it's not just enough to overcome these hurdles and to get senior management approval. It's extremely important to get counselor buy-in. We do have the support of senior staff, and it's been great. But in order to make it work, it has to fit into the culture of our agency, and it has to fit into the employment network's culture in order for this to work. I truly believe the success of this program will hinge on the consumer in counselor acceptance and relationship. Next slide, please. So what is our program? Basically, the counselor, it starts with the counselor and the consumer. They explain the initiative. They explain what this Partnership Plus Advantage program is all about. When there is agreement, individual is referred over to our agents, over to this department, and we facilitate the handoff, if you will, to an EN or a community rehab provider. The individual is put into status 32, and the ticket is no longer in use. The person has been rehabbed, and the ticket is then able to be assigned to an EN. And upon referral to the EN, the consumer would assign the ticket. So it's not to increase the workload of the counselors. We made sure that referral, the work, if you will, to facilitate this handoff, to set up the arrangements, to have the visit to the EN, to answer some questions, is done by this department. And the ability to continue to provide time-limited services while that person has been closed out, is in status 32, is certainly in compliance of caseload management, the individual staff at SES, Statewide Employment Services. We are qualified voc rehab counselors, and it's also in keeping with the RSA standards. Next slide, please. So what do we do? Person's closed out, they refer it over to Statewide Employment Services. We identify a community rehab provider / employment network. We initiate a contract order. Persons in 32 would say, would like for you to accept this individual, and we will initiate a contract order at a minimum of 2 hours a month, up to a maximum of 10 hours a month, not to exceed 8 months within that post-employment service time. Many individuals need 2 to 4 hours a month under Partnership Plus and to maintain employment. The existing hourly rate we have that we have to live with within our service delivery system is $34.24 an hour. And the type of service and the utilization of the These hours will be based upon consumers' needs. It can range from visiting the job site and addressing issues, or to phone calls, or to coffees and meet you at lunch, and just to customize whatever the consumer needs in order to enhance their ability to stay employed. In development of this program, we were mandated that all paid services in terms of agreement need to conform to those existing regulations that I spoke of in the service delivery system, and it does. Next slide, please. So here in Massachusetts, we have this electronic invoicing system, and it's no different than when we had the paper. Every month, the employment network would submit an electronic invoice, and would attach some case notes. Some of it is just everybody's doing fine, or the individual's doing fine, or there might be some issues involved in that with the consumer. It's flexibility. As I said, we would contract with you for, say, 4 hours a month for 8 months. That's 32 hours. There might be 1 month where the individual may need more than those hours that we first identified the four. Maybe they need six. Maybe they need eight. There's flexibility built into that system to provide whatever services that individual needs. Flexibility is what's needed is close communication. Communication is key from the consumer to the employment network to a vocational counselor, in identifying how we may need to tweak the original plan in order to make this thing work. Next slide, please.